Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, George. It's a pleasure to be here. And how are you?
I'm well. I'm doing good. And it's a joy for me to have this conversation with you. Just looking forward to hearing your leadership story. And even before we start hearing about you, tell us a little bit about yourself, Carol.
I consider myself a lifelong learner. I have spent most of my life being curious. So I know a lot of things that are not necessarily relevant to what I do every day. And I just, you know, read quite a lot. I'm also very passionate about people. And in the last, I would say, couple of years, I've been very, very concerned about the climate and the sustainability. And that has become an area of interest for me. And just asking myself, what is my level of contribution to solving this real challenge that we are facing, you know, as the world, as a human population? So that is, in a nutshell, how I would describe myself.
Thank you for that personal side. Your professional side, tell us a little bit about that.
So let me start by my current role. I'm actually transitioning now to a different role within Schneider Electric. I'm moving to join what we call International Operations Strategy Team. And I'll be doing a lot of focused efforts around our sustainability agenda. In Schneider Electric terms, international operations is all countries outside of America, Europe, and Asia. So everything else divided into four zones. So it will be Australia, India, Middle East, Africa, and South America. So I'm very excited about this new journey for me. And it's definitely a place that I have very limited experience and exposure in. So it's going to be a very steep learning curve. And just before this, I was leading the East Africa operations for Schneider Electric for about 3.5 years. And that really is probably where I spent a lot of time developing my muscle around leadership and leading a business and going through a very significant phase of the business in terms of transformation. And then spent a couple of years working in different businesses at Schneider for 3 years before the most immediate role. So in total in Schneider, I'm now 6 years. And before Schneider, I spent 9 years at GE building power plants and powering Africa. Spent a lot of time in Nigeria and most of the other West African countries, in Tanzania, Angola, and South Africa. And really, that's also where I participated in, I'd say, what we call bringing development to Africa. And then earlier, before GE, I spent about 5 years at Unilever. And you will be interested to note that I spent the first few years of my career as an accountant, even though I studied engineering. So that's kind of the lost soul at the beginning that found myself back into the technical space, but more from a business leadership perspective.
First and foremost, congratulations on your new role. As you said, it sounds exciting. I mean, it's taken up to a higher level. So congratulations on that. Wow.
Thank you.
If you are to look at the genesis of your leadership, where can you say it was?
I think, honestly, I always took charge, even when I was younger. So I would say growing up, even though I'm a middle child, I sort of found myself on the front lines. And I remember my father, when we were growing up, used to give us nicknames based on this book called George Orwell's, you know, the book of the Animal Farm. And I had a nickname called Napoleon. And you know what Napoleon was in that book? That was my father. And that's how he saw me. But I remember also, you know, my father always telling me that I am like Margaret Thatcher. So, you know, those statements that were made when I was a young girl, didn't realize that maybe they got into my subconscious. So all through my primary school, high school, I was always, you know, taking leadership positions. And then when I started working, of course, you know, starting from junior positions in the company, but I quickly made, you know, to being a team manager, I would say 2 to 3 years into getting into the corporate world, and took different roles, leading teams and also working individually across the career. But I would say the last role I did was really leading a business and taking full responsibility for a business performance in a region. So I'd consider that as, I would say, that's how the evolution of my leadership journey has been.
Evolution of your leadership, and it's true. And it's very interesting what you say, because many leaders I've interviewed like you, it started from the home. So it's amazing to see just the home setting, the way it prepares us for who we shall be in the future. So it's just interesting. So it just resonates with what many people say. So for you, has it been in the last 3 years leading the business and making sure it succeeds? Has that experience been for you?
So that's been, I would say, my most rewarding and also challenging times of my leadership. Rewarding in the sense that this is really where I developed my leadership muscle and really also realized, you know, a significant portion of my untested, I would say, leadership, because this is really the first time I was leading a business. But also challenging, because I had to get involved in a very difficult period of the business evolution. So the business I was leading had been acquired by Schneider. So it was 5 years before I became the leader. So when I took leadership, it was 5 years after the acquisition. And there was a lot of opportunity to integrate, you know, the acquired business, because it was initially a family-owned business, into the broader corporate structure. And there was also a significant opportunity to basically transform and restructure the business to be ready to grow. And being in the center of those difficult decisions and making sure that they were executed properly was probably one of the, I would say, the biggest challenges of my leadership. But because also I say rewarding, because they allowed me to really grow myself to be able to navigate that difficult period.
You've talked about two things, and I'd like us to unpack them. One of them, you said your leadership muscle and the challenges. What are the components of your leadership muscle?
I'm not going to give you a textbook answer. I'll give you my practical experience. So I think one of the biggest, I would say, realities when you become a leader is that, you know, the buck stops with you. People look to you for solutions. Sometimes you do not have those solutions, but you have to pretend that you have them or find them. And many times you have to understand that when people come to you, they come to you because they believe that you're the right person to provide those solutions. I think the other thing is to be able to ensure that teams are still inspired despite going through difficulty, and to still paint a picture of hope even when the situation is grim. And being able to navigate, you know, the two extremes and still remain calm, because when you as a leader is shaken, then the team becomes shaken. You know, I remember during this transition period, my assistant was telling me, I think you're made of steel. And I'm like, I don't even know that because you are the one telling me. And she's like, I've seen a lot of this, you know, the journey you've traveled, and I've seen the challenges you've faced, yet you still are able to remain calm. And you know the story of the duck and how beneath the waters you're just trying to stay afloat, but you know, up here people see us a calm person, but beneath there's a lot of fire and fighting going on. And I think that probably is a testament of how my journey has been. There's been also very great, you know, a great rewarding moments, because when you do something and do it smoothly, even when it is difficult, it just gives you that energy and the muscle keeps growing, knowing that, okay, now if you do it like this, it actually works. But also realizing that what works in one situation does not necessarily work in the next.
Challenges you faced.
So I took over like a business that I said was an acquisition. So there was, of course, a significant, I would say it was almost like two organizations in one. So you have the company that was acquired, which was a family-owned business that had its own culture. And then there was people that had joined the organization post-acquisition. So we had these two distinct cultures and expectations of the company. And my job was to ensure that we brought some integration and harmony. So started on a journey of sort of, we called it a culture transformation journey, which was to integrate and break the silos and also make people belong, because there was clearly people belonged to the other organization and they identified with that organization and not the one that has, you know, is now owning them. So breaking those that separation was one of the biggest hurdles I knew. When I had taken over, I'd been in the organization before I took over. So I already knew this was a major issue that needed to be resolved quickly if we were going to be successful. And then there were, you know, elements around getting systems in place. Remember, again, this was an acquisition. It was like a startup in a big organization. So ensuring that we had the right systems to be able to embed ourselves in the major organization. So that meant implementation of new ERP systems. So doing all that in this 3-year period was a lot of things on the table. And then knowing that the setup of the business was not optimal. So we needed to do some major decisions around shaping out some business divisions. And again, that was very difficult to just sit in front and drive it, and knowing that people were going to have to leave the organization as well. So all this in 3 years is a lot.
When you look back at your 3 years and as you're now moving on to this new role, when you look back, what are some of your most happiest moments?
So there were several. Of course, running a business means that when you win a big order, or you know, when you deliver a project successfully, you're grateful. As a leader, I always made sure that with my teams, we celebrated. This is still something that I am learning to, because celebration is not natural for me. So it took a lot of effort, and also keeping the teams engaged and recognized. But also when I had to represent the organization externally, I think those were some of my delightful moments. I enjoy sharing my journey. When I had to mentor people, either knowingly or unknowingly, I realized that there are many people who take inspiration from me without even my knowledge. So when I meet people randomly and they're like, oh, I'm really inspired by your journey, that gives me delightful moments. In the business itself, we had great moments of wins, great wins. We had successful implementations when we had, you know, our SAP go live, very, very successful, implemented during COVID, you know, with very limited support from the group, unlike maybe other implementations. So those were delightful moments. There are many, many of them. I can write a book about them.
So for you, if you are to look at some of the traits that you have developed as a leader that have made you successful or enjoy your leadership, what are those traits?
So I consider myself to be an authentic leader. I lead with my heart, and what you see is what you get. So I don't know how not to be myself. I also consider myself to be inspiring. I do a lot of sharing my journey openly and just being open. So I play an open book, authentic, and spend a lot of my time really ensuring that people get energized, because I also know that as a leader, results can only be delivered through people. So I spend a lot of time supporting. I play a lot of, I mean, if you come to me asking for support, I will not send you away. I will find a way to help you. And if I'm not able to help you immediately, I will ensure that I make a note to do it. So my team always, you know, counted on me. And some of the people were like, I'm here because I know you have my back. You know, I got your back. So I provided my team's back all the time.
I like that. Yeah, supportive leadership. Yeah. It's very, very key. Having interacted with leaders in your space or leaders at your level, what can you say they do that makes leadership difficult to be productive?
What comes to mind, and maybe I can speak about myself and some of the things that I wish I could have done differently. So, for example, when I have taken decisions that I see are not turning out properly, especially around hiring people, I should have taken a decision faster to basically, you know, take some difficult actions. So I feel like there's an opportunity to realize that if it's a wrong decision, then take a quick decision to unwrong it, if there's such a word. because again, you know, leadership, there's no crystal ball, there's no magic bullet. Some decisions you take and they're not right, or they don't come out as you expected. So being open to realize that, okay, this didn't work, and acknowledging that it failed and therefore pivoting quickly is important. And I see also some leaders, for example, not showing their human side. So, you know, you feel like they are, you know, people show up and they come to work and they don't realize that people are going through anxious moments. And so how do you adapt your leadership when these things are difficult? How do you give people hope? How do you re-energize? How do you adapt your style depending on the circumstances of the people that you're leading or the circumstances of the business? So those are some of the things I would say could make leaders not to be effective, and also just not being able to connect with people. Sometimes, you know, you feel like you're the boss and therefore you're up there and other people have to do the work. And if they're not doing the work, you're coming down with breathing fire and asking, you know, what's going on? Why are you guys not delivering? And failing to realize that these people actually need to know that you're part of them and you want them to succeed, for because their success is your success.
So true. So true. And I think there's this stereotype thing of a leader, you know, because of the way oriented, or even, I think even just the misconcepts of what a leader is.
Yeah.
And even within our culture, you know, within our culture, son of authority is up there. You shouldn't question, you shouldn't show weakness. So definitely there's that orientation to us. But very just hearing the way you're speaking, the way you've developed and your style. So I'm just curious to know what brought you to that place to start being bold enough to be honest, to be supportive. I just, what is the thought or the motivation behind that style?
So I like I told you earlier, I'm a curious person. So I spend a lot of time learning. I read a lot. I also spend time really reflecting. But I watch how people lead. And there are certain people that you see the style and you're like, that style looks very interesting. But I've also benefited from leadership development programs. Been trained as a leader, but I've also worked with leadership coaches. So that really then, you know, brings out some of these elements of self-awareness and knowing, you know, when to adapt your style. And just knowing that, you know, you're a human being that comes to you to work as your full self. So with that, I'm able to build trust really easily, actually. And I'll tell you, some of my team members, I've connected with them beyond work to very deep levels. And people come to tell you things that sometimes you even wonder why you're being told. But because you're the leader, you deserve to hear them and support people accordingly or celebrate with them. And it has also then, you know, by working through those, being aware, seeing how other people are leading has helped me to pick elements of it, listening to podcasts, picking elements of how people are leading, certain concepts that we deal with, just learning continuously, you know, means that you become a better leader.
Is there one person or one book that has impacted your leadership that you can talk about, or a number? What are some of the things that you can say have impacted you?
Yeah, I'll have a recency bias, but I can tell you I've read a lot of books. So one of the books that I would say really, you know, inspired how I look at life in totality and leadership is the book by, most recent book I read by Ursula Barnes. She's the former CEO of Xerox and also was, you know, part of Obama's advisory body around the economy and all this. So this is the most recent book I read. But I also read the book by the former CEO of PepsiCo, My Life in Full, and many, many, many books. I enjoy reading, especially memoirs and, you know, real life books, people that have gone through the leadership journey, and just seeing, you know, how they navigated their corporate careers. And more importantly, you know, corporate women who also have been able to keep their families together, because that is a big challenge today for many successful women. And just trying to understand, how did they do it? What did they do differently? And from their books, you're able to pick some of this. And then, of course, I follow up listening to their TED Talks, to the questions, the podcasts, they have the interviews. So I fill in the gaps. And I think for me also, helping to realize that I will never be a perfect mother or a perfect wife, but I'm trying my best in my current environment. And also knowing that women that have gone before me have tried and it has worked.
So true. You said you are an engineer. That's your training, yes. Right? What field of engineering?
So I studied electrical and electronic engineering. I don't like to blow my trumpet, but I also realized it's important. And actually, I was the valedictorian in my graduating year at the University of Nairobi.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Why engineering?
How did I get myself in engineering? You know the Kenyan education system, the way it works is, depending on what you score in your Form 4, you're put in a certain box. That's the box I ended up in. But I also, I didn't really have many role models. My cousin then was studying civil engineering, and I was like, okay, maybe this is the thing to do. And I had qualified, so let's do it.
But they how many ladies were in your class, your graduating class? How many ladies were you?
Wow, my class had like the largest number, which was like 9 out of a class of 70. That was like one of the largest. Normally, even till now, you'll be surprised 20 years later. Your average class, female class is 5, 7, sometimes even 3. But our class was unique. We had 9.
Wow. Then just tell me about what does your company do? You've talked about your company. What does it do?
So Schneider Electric is a global leader in energy efficiency. Efficiency and industrial automation, and we push solutions to our customers to help them use their energy better. So we manage their energy and also automate processes to be efficient. So it entails a lot of things, but a lot of the work we do is very technical. Our teams are very technical, and that's how we spend, I'd say, our everyday a week. We do sell products through our distribution channel, but again, these are usually capital goods that customers use to install in their products. So for simplicity, we say once we help even utilities like Kenya Powers and the like to manage the grid through our hardwares, but also software solutions and similar companies. We're actually the leader in the world in this space. We serve the top 10 utilities with our solutions. We help industries to connect their processes to power, but also to automate and optimize their processes through our digital solutions. So Schneider Electric's mission is actually to be a digital partner for efficiency and sustainability.
Wow, thank you for that. Just now I know something more.
Yes.
You said you've worked within the African continent, within the region, and I guess your new role will also give you that space, working within the continent. When you look at our continent, and just from your experience in terms of leadership, and this is a common question I like to ask my guests, what kind of leadership does Africa need to reach its full potential?
I think about Africa, I think we have great people. However, we also need leadership with integrity, especially from our political perspective. Because today, a lot of African economies are intertwined with political decisions. And you know what I'm talking about. And Africa needs selfless leaders, people who can really put country first before themselves. And when I look across African countries, you know, I'm struggling to see where the best practice is, especially from a political leadership perspective, because I believe we have the right components to be successful, but we need leaders that can actually utilize those and be selfless. I know that, you know, if you look at some countries, especially in the East, that have gone through similar journeys as us and started maybe at the same level, good examples being Singapore, but India also, you've seen that the evolution has been possible because the people who took those leadership positions put the country first completely. And that's what we need.
Yeah, well said. If you're to start all over again, what would you do differently as a leader?
You know, I hear that question and I'm like, there's only one life to live. So what I would do is I wouldn't have the knowledge I have now to practice that. So it is through living what I have lived through that I've developed and learned. And I was just watching a clip recently about a lady who said, you cannot compare the experience you've not had. And so I can only pick the lessons I have learned and apply it forward rather than starting all over again. So I find it very difficult to answer that question, but I would pick the lessons I've picked and say I would apply them in the future. But every experience that I've had has been, adding on top of the other to build the muscle that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Any particular experience that was really transformational to you as a leader?
I think speaking to a coach really for me helped to unpack some of the leadership muscles that were hidden and just getting that boldness, because I think when you get a professional to help you find the strength that you have within you and really maybe do it in a more structured manner. So I've had several coaching conversations for different elements, but I would say every coaching conversation I've had has taken me to the next level. I had a coaching conversation earlier when I became the leader of this business, and it was more around leadership. And in fact, it was together. We did it together when we were doing the cultural transformation. So there was a leadership coaching aspect to it. And that really helped me to realize that I needed to model the behaviors that we wanted. And so that became the one thing that I was, focusing on. And then through also reading, I was able to build certain habits as a leader that helped me to become more effective. So just taking care of my own health and well-being was very important to being an effective leader. And I think that is something that continues along the way. So those are the things that I found helped me. But I also realized that the more I became very busy, the more I was productive. I became very, very aware of the scarcity of time. And I was very, very intentional about the things I did with the time that I had available. And so I would say, going through this journey, you cannot really pick one thing. It's continuous. It's a continuous, and if you keep an open mind, it's a continuous process. Yeah.
I like that you keep bringing up your experience in the cultural transformation. If there's a leader listening right now and one they're in that space where they're trying to figure out how can I transform our culture, they're in that space where they are a family business and an acquisition coming together and they're just trying to figure out and struggling, what are some of the nuggets that you can give such a leader from what you learned in your experience about cultural transformation?
So there's one book I read, which says, it's actually titled Who Not How by Dr. Benjamin Hardy. So once you know that you need to fix this, find out who can help you. You don't have to figure out the how, because there are people who know how to do that. There are experts who know how to run these programs. And for us, that was really, the difference, because I don't know how to run a culture transformation, but we have several people in the market who are trained to do this kind of thing. So bringing them on board and having them walk the journey with you makes it a lot easier. And you do it in a more structured manner with very clear deliverables. And they help to hold you accountable, because some of these things we run them and then pressures come. You have to deliver the numbers and then you're like, okay, let's park the culture first. Let's focus on the pressures at hand. But when you have an external party whose job is just to do that for you, then they hold you to account and they drive the journey for you. So for me, that who, not how became my mantra across everything that I need to do. The first question I ask myself is who can help me get this done? Because I'm not an expert and I don't need to be an expert. I just need to get the expert to help me get it done.
That is so profound, Carol. Because American leaders have this fallacy or misplaced belief, because they are the leader, they should know it all.
I don't need to know. I mean, you cannot be an expert in everything, can you? For sure. You're just a human being. And accepting that there are people actually who have that expertise and using them to your benefit or to the benefit of the organization is just what you need to do.
You sleep better, I guess.
Definitely. I do.
So you talked about your dad calling you Napoleon. And just curious, how much influence did your dad had on your leadership as you grew, or any other person within your near and dear ones?
You know, I'm actually a second born in a family of eight. And so my dad had a name for each one of us in the family. So we the first four are girls, and then my brother, and then two girls, and then my younger brother. Now, in terms of the time we grew up and when my dad was really giving us these nicknames, we were about the four of us, the four girls. So, you know, he called my other sister, our fourth born, Molly, called my follower, Squilla, and our first born sister, I don't remember the name he had called him, it's still in the book. And it was really interesting because each of the characters in that book reflected how each of us behaved. And somehow those things start to shape who you become, even without realizing. And my dad always called me to take charge somehow, by default or by whatever, I have no idea, but he shaped a lot of the things that I did. And then when I started going to school, you know, I was a gifted student. And so, you know, all the time coming out top of the class, and you know, you come home and my dad was a man who loved to celebrate. You would all put your report forms on the front and then he would be like, okay, let's get some goat down and enjoy the meat. I mean, I grew up in the village, so that was our form of celebration. And my dad also liked his bottle, so he would, celebrate it in whatever form he understood. And that sort of just continued to, you know, reinstate and, you know, make those things of doing your best and become ingrained in just how I did. So I constantly strived to be the best. And in fact, now I'm having to unlearn some of those things of being a high achiever and saying, okay, I need to step back a bit, because as a leader, you need to realize that, you know, everybody cannot be moving at your pace. You have to slow down to make sure that you carry everyone along. Yeah.
Yeah, carrying others along. That's something. In terms of, you said getting experts, just expound that a bit more, getting people who know things. You know, when you talk about cultural transformation, so what kind of experts are you really talking about? Is it an employee? Is it a consultant? Just unpack that a little more.
So depending on what is the topic on the table, in our case, it was cultural transformation, but along the way, there were many other things that we needed to do. So sometimes we tap into internal expertise, and many times we tap into external expertise. So for example, when we needed to do our SAP implementation, we had to tap into the internal teams that do this for a living. When we had to do cultural transformation, we had to tap into an external consultant who does this as well every day. So they know how to do it. They have models and frameworks to deliver such programs. So depending on what is on the table, for me, that is the first question I ask. It could be an individual. For example, I said again, our business is very technical. So I know when it is this kind of problem or this kind of customer issue, this is the guy I need to go to. And I will just say, guys, we have this issue. I know you can find a solution. So I put the person in front and really give them all the support they need to deliver, you know, what is requested or expected of them. And sometimes they may come back and say, okay, I cannot do it alone. We need more people, or we need more resources, whatever it is. I just make sure that is available. So just knowing that, especially because being in a technical environment, you can never be an expert in everything. So knowing who is my right guy for what. So we needed, for example, to develop a new business, which is software. And I knew that within the team, there's one guy who was very interested in this space. So just giving them the breath and the space to say, okay, go develop this for us and come back you know, see progress and monitoring. I think for me, the most critical element as well as a leader is once you bring the who, how then do you walk the journey with them so that you're not letting them also just, you know, go whatever, but keeping to, you know, constant check-ins and maybe redirecting when we feel like we are not, you know, in the path or following whatever it is, adapting accordingly.
I was listening to something and they said one of the most important traits right now for many people who are employed is adaptability. And you just talked about, you know, just being able to adapt and move forward. So that's something that is very, very critical. And you talked about leading technical people or technical company. Just talk about that a little more of your experience, because technical people are, for lack of a better word, are special. And how you lead them, I think you need special skills. How's that been?
I am one of them, so that helps, right? By the way, and on a serious note, I think being one of them made them more accepting. So because again, if you're not one of them, you know, what is it that you're bringing on the table? But also understanding them and understanding their areas of strength and also where they need support. So technical people are great people because one, they're autonomous. They get their things done by themselves. So you just need to give them the space with clear check-ins. Again, you might lose them because they might get so engrossed in their great technical solutions at the expense of the business. So bringing a balance is a good thing, but also helping them to realize how their technical expertise is impacting the business. So making those dots, connecting the dots is great. But I'll tell you, it's probably the most interesting group of people to lead because they're smart. You're leading very smart people.
So true. There is this issue of the Boeing. You know, a friend of mine was telling me about Boeing. You know, the one that makes planes and where it began by technical people leading and technical people. But then now it's reached a place where Boeing had to think about being sustainable, having business and making money. And bringing people who are not technical, you know, these are the kind of people. And just that tension between the two different people, the business people and the technical people. So as you said, you accepted because you're a technical person. So that's interesting.
Yeah, but I also am a business person. And I think it's easier to build a business person from a technical person than to build a technical person from a business person. I don't know whether that makes sense.
I'm trying to make sense of it.
Basically, you have a technical person as a base. You can develop a business person. But if you have a business person, you cannot develop a technical person because the technical skill takes a long time to learn and to develop and to train for. So it's you can have in one person the two skills if your base is technical. I hope I'm making sense.
No, it makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so I'll tell you, for example, in Schneider, I'd say the bulk of the organization, the base is technical. Many of the leaders have an engineering background. I mean, it's natural, including our CEO. So this is like the normal. And then you build the business skills and knowledge and expertise along the way. But you still need core technical people because we are a technology company and you need core technical people to continue developing the solutions. Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You said that you mentor people. That's something that you love to do. So what are some of the, as you mentor people and I assume younger people, what are some of the things that you have seen they want to hear from you?
So I think many, many people, first of all, approach you and say, I would like you to be my mentor. But many people don't understand what they're looking for in a mentor. And this is something that along the way I've also learned the importance of knowing what you want for in a mentor. Because you can have as many mentors as you can. That's my philosophy. And for certain things that you want to achieve, you can go to a certain person. So when they come to me and say, I would like you to be my mentor, and I ask them, what is it that you want to be mentored on? And many people are vague. In fact, the young people are usually very vague on this. Oh, I would like to grow my career. Oh, I just like the way you work. I like the way your career has grown. I'm like, Be clear, be very specific on what you want. Because when you're clear and specific, it helps drive the right conversation. We can sit over coffee and chat over my entire life or my entire career, but how does that really help you in the specific gap that you wanted to close by working with a mentor? That's how I like to talk about. So many times when people approach me, especially on LinkedIn, they come on my inbox, I usually ask them exactly for what. And that takes people back to think. And they think about it and they come back and you can now have a more focused conversation. But one of the other things that I just like to do is just to put my stories out there, because through that, some people get inspired. So just, you know, being out there, being open and realizing that the experiences I've had can just be, you know, a roadmap for somebody else. And that person I may not even know. So I randomly bump into people, you know, in malls or wherever, and they're like, hi, Carol. I'm like, who are you? I'm like, yeah, I follow you. I'm your follower on LinkedIn. I'm like, okay, good. Because I don't even know them. And that has really been very rewarding, because by sharing stories, you just don't know who will be inspired and touched. So that has been, for me, a real lesson. And every time I was having a discussion with also a mentor, my mentor, and she told me, every story you don't tell, you're denying somebody a chance to actually grow. It could be someone's, you know, roadmap that you're denying them. And I was, you know, I was a bit shy at the beginning, African woman, not so sure whether I should even be promoting, self-promoting and those things. But I'm like, okay, here I'm just being myself. I'm telling my story. If you like it, you can use it. If you don't like it, it's fine. Somebody else will like it.
And you touched on why I do these podcasts, is to hear stories of leaders and stories people learn. And you see, storytelling has become a big communication avenue. Yeah. And knowing within ourselves, even as Africans, storytelling is something that is part and parcel of us.
Yes.
In everything. Yes. So two things as we come to conclude the session. One, legacy. What's the legacy you hope to establish or create? And secondly, what's the principle or the moral of your leadership story?
We cannot talk about leadership without talking about imposter thoughts and imposter syndrome. I learned recently that it's called imposter thoughts, not syndrome, because this is something that especially females go through. Just acknowledging that sometimes we start to doubt our abilities, even when other people believe in us more than we believe in ourselves, and realizing that it's perfectly normal and okay, and that everybody goes through this. So my it's not really a legacy, but the moral of my leadership journey is there's no ceiling. Yes, it's defined by, you know, the world, society, but for you, for me and for people that follow me, they just need to believe that there's no ceiling. You just define what that ceiling is for yourself. The second thing that I would like to do, and this is also very quite aligned with my new role, and that's really the kind of, you know, I'd say it's not yet sunset, but the things I would like to focus on in the next, you know, decade is really to drive conversations around, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. By the way, I'm part of the global advisory board for Schneider Electric on diversity, equity, and inclusion. But more importantly, on including especially females in the STEM conversation. So that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about doing more and more of, and really asking the question, at what age is it relevant to influence a child to think about a STEM career? Because we still don't have. And the world is moving more and more towards STEM. And we need African children to be part of that story. Because remember, you know, by 2050, you're talking about 50% of the young people, the working population being in Africa. We need those girls to be driving the right conversations and building and innovating in the space that we are. So those are the kind of things I would like to be more and more involved in. And I'll do that, you know, within corporate, but also with other like-minded people.
I am cheering you on. I'm cheering you on.
Yeah.
It is needed. It is so, so needed. Yes. And it's true, you're saying things are moving to the STEM space. And we need to put our young girls there. And thank you for being a beacon of hope for that. And I wish you all the best. Any final thoughts before we close and say goodbye?
Honestly, I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to speak to you. Always happy to share stories and touch one or two souls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Wishing you all the best and congratulations on your new position. May you be successful in it. Bye for now.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.